I hope you've brought along a magnet. You might need it. We're going to go hunting for micrometeorites shortly. But before we get to that and the other stories in Research Filter tonight, I welcome our guest. He's a scientist. He's a writer. He's a science communicator. Dr. Rob Bell, welcome. Oh, Rob, do we have you?
G'day, how are you?
There we go. Hello, how are you?
Yes, I'm here.
Rob, before we good to have you. So before we get the magnets out, tell me about some cool things that have been happening in space for the first time. Now, I'm going to try this word, interferometry. Is that right? Interferometry?
Pretty close. Interferometry.
What is it? What's been happening?
Basically, interferometry kind of is what it sounds like. The first word sounds a bit like interference, and that's essentially what it is. It's a meter or a measuring device that uses interference. So to cut a kind of long story short, scientists use these tools, these interferometers, to measure all kinds of things. And probably the most famous interferometer was the LIGO interferometer, which recently, well, a few years ago, helped us discover gravitational waves. And it did that because the gravitational waves interfered with light beams coming back and the waves kind of colliding and you get an interference pattern. A little bit like if you drop a couple of pebbles into a pool and the ripples collide with each other and make a bit of a weird pattern in there. Well, by reading these weird patterns of interference, scientists can tell all kinds of things. Now, the reason it's got to do with space, well, that's because they've managed to start the building blocks of an interferometer in space, but instead of using lasers and light beams, they're actually going to be using atoms in a weird state of matter called a Bose-Einstein condensate, which is some super cold state of matter at sort of minus 270 degrees. So they've managed to make this super cold state of matter in space and then get the atoms that sort of act like waves to interfere with each other. So they're two-thirds of the way, basically, of making an interferometer up there. Now, why build an interferometer like this in space is probably the obvious next question.
Are there applications?
So they want to test Einstein's theory of general relativity, the fact that gravity sort of acts on things of different masses in exactly the same way.
Now, I'm going to take us from outer space back to our own planet for a second. Scientists have found there are literally thousands of tons of extraterrestrial dust falling on our planet each year. That's quite a visual. And with it comes micrometeorites. What are they? What do they do? What do we know about them?
So, yeah, micrometeorites are really cool. They do fall all over the planet all of the time. It's basically just sort of space dust. Some of them are from the tails of comets. Some are from asteroids, all sorts of places. And they sort of rain down all the time. We're probably all used to, from movies, the big meteorites that come down and slam into Earth and cause all sorts of problems. Well, and they happen occasionally, thankfully not too often. But these micrometeorites rain down all the time. And Antarctica is a great place to find them because it doesn't really snow or rain down there very often. And there's no other dirt around there, so you can find these little micrometeorites quite easily. And the great thing about them is they can work out what they're made of. They tell us a little bit about space and the origins of the universe, which is kind of cool as well. But you can actually find your own micrometeorites around that, well, maybe not around the house, but on your own roof maybe, even in your own garden.
How on earth do you do that?
Well, this is where the magnet comes in. So you need something that's stronger than a fridge-grade magnet. So if you can get what is not very scientifically termed a super magnet or a rare earth or neodymium magnet, and most of the hobby stores will have these kind of things, you want to cover it in a bit of a sandwich bag because otherwise you won't get the micrometeorites back off the magnet when you're done.
Okay.
Because most micrometeorites have got a bit of iron content in them. So you can kind of comb through dust. You can put it near the downpipe from your roof when it rains for the first time because it'll flush them all off your roof. And these things are tiny little specks and they'll collect on your magnet. And what you can do then, if you've got a microscope, have a look at them and they'll be little tiny spheres. So they're quite round because of the way they've come showering down through the atmosphere. And you can build up your own little collection. There's something like 5 tons of micrometeorites that rain down on the planet Earth, which is quite a lot, really.
Obviously,
they're spread out everywhere.
Yeah.
But it's quite a lot. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, Rob, to your last story that you wanted to tell us about tonight. Exciting, this one for lovers of dinosaurs, of which I count myself a part. There's been some amazing dinosaur fossils found in China recently, including a dinosaur with opposable thumbs. What do we know about these creatures?
Yeah. This is pretty amazing. I mean, the thing about dinosaur fossils is they're most often, obviously, they come in lots of bits and pieces. You know, there were lots of dinosaurs around for millions and millions of years, but normally not fossilized. And those that do are usually a jumble of kind of bones that we find like a jigsaw without a box. So we don't really know how to put them together, but we do our best. This particular fossil, which was unearthed fairly recently, looked a bit like a pterosaur, one of those sort of, like a pterodactyl, a flying dinosaur. It's a relatively small one, but the amazing thing about it, because it was so well preserved, is it's actually got an opposable thumb. So it's the earliest example that we know of any animal to have an opposable thumb. So essentially something that it can use to grasp, which means we're pretty sure it used to climb trees. So whilst it's got a relatively long, interesting scientific name, scientists have dubbed it a monkey dactyl, which I think is kind of cool.
Huh. And the other cool thing about this fossil discovery I heard was that it was found with fossilized eggs. Why are dinosaur eggs considered particularly precious as a find?
Yeah, so dinosaur eggs are quite rare to actually find as well, even rarer than dinosaur fossils. But they can tell us a little bit about the reproductive cycle of these particular dinosaurs. So it is really rare to find them, but it tells us, it fills in a little bit more of the puzzle about these dinosaurs. And this particular monkey dactyl, if anyone gets a chance to have a look online at the fossil that they found, it's quite incredible. And they use some pretty cool techniques to actually visualise the specimen that they had in there in the stone too. Quite amazing.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being here tonight, Rob.
No worries at all. Thanks.
That's Dr. Rob Bell. He's a scientist, a writer, and a science communicator, and he's been my guest tonight on our research filter.